The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Let's travel the world together. She can make it easy and in any kind of weather. No TSA, no bag checks, no patting down. She's talking from the skies and sending lots of feel-good sounds. Oh, Betty in the sky, have you heard her yet? She loves traveling, there's no doubt. Betty and the Jets. She's weird and wonderful. Oh, Betty, she's a podcast queen. She's wearing high heel shoes, got her wings on too. You know I've never seen a better stew. Oh, Betty and the Jets.
Hello and welcome to Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. I'm Betty. I'm a flight attendant for a major airline, and I bring you stories from the airplane, from the flight attendants and the pilots, and from traveling around the world. In this episode, we have stories about Fufula, Watha, a streaker, suitcases, crackers, babies, stowaways, wigs, and a thruple kerfuffle. The music for the show I recorded on the streets of London. Let's get on with the show. I don't know if I ever mentioned that we have to check the crew rest area before boarding, before we're getting off the plane, just to make sure somebody hasn't, make sure nobody's there, like a stowaway or a sleeping crew member or whatever. And I always make jokes to the other flight attendants saying, just once, I'd like to find somebody down there to justify all this checking. And this flight attendant goes, oh, we found somebody down there once. I'm like, you did? Because I've been checking it for decades and there's nothing down there but blankets and pillows. And she said, yeah. She said, before boarding, the flight attendant went down there to check and the curtain was closed and there was big men's sandals. And she's thinking, aha, I found somebody, because there's no crew member who wears sandals. You're not allowed to wear sandals. And she's thinking, it's a terrorist. It's a stowaway. I found someone. And she whipped open the curtain and there was a cleaner sleeping in there. And it's like, wah, wah, wah. But it's still a good thing she checked, because that person would have been off to Europe unintentionally. So I guess it is good that we checked. I was flying with this cute, petite, short flight attendant, and she commutes also. And when we land and you have a short time to catch your flight, you are all about making that flight. You know, that's it's enough of, you know, saying, hey, good trip or whatever. You're like focused. Get, you know, go, go, go. So she grabbed her coat from the closet, put it on, started barreling down the jetway, going to make her flight. And another flight attendant, who just happens to be big and tall, yelled at her, hello, you're wearing my coat. And she looked down and the coat she had put on was like past her fingertips, six sizes too big. It's dragging on the ground. So they switched coats. So now she's running to her flight, laughing to herself, picturing the big, tall flight attendant putting on her teeny tiny coat.
Okay, so I can't remember where we were going at the time, but there was a gentleman on there that had dementia.
Okay.
And kept wandering up and down the aisles of the airplane. He had his wife and his daughter with him, but they weren't paying attention to him. He kept wandering up and down and sitting next to people that he didn't
strangers.
Know. Yeah, strangers, and they're kind of looking at him. So we kept having to push him, you need to come get your dad, or we bring him back up to, you know, the daughter. Anyways, we were just about to do our last service of the flight, and someone came down the aisle and said, hey, you know that man that's been walking up and down the aisles?
And we're like,
yeah. We were like, yeah. He said, he's naked.
Oh, my.
So I was like, what? So we ran up to the the front of the plane, and in between first class and the main cabin, there's a galley there, and he was standing there in the galley, but naked.
Naked as a jaybird.
Naked as a jaybird. Not one stitch of clothing on the guy. I was like, oh my God. So I was like, what are you doing? He said, I'm trying to take a shower.
Oh my God.
So we had to run back to go get the daughter and the wife. And there's like, his clothes are nowhere. I was like, where are your clothes? And he didn't know. So I started asking the people on the aisle, because their eyes were like big as saucers, like, oh my God, that did not just happen. And I said, do y'all know where this man's clothes are? And they're like, yeah, his pants are over there, and his shirt's up there, and his, and we're not sure, his socks over and behind there. He was crazy.
He was streaking.
He was naked, naked.
Naked as a
skinny, naked man. It was not pretty.
Yes.
There's a fine line between a know-it-all and being helpful. And I try to say things in a nice way so it comes off as just helpful, because I'm at the airport all the time. And it was funny to me. Twice on one 3-day trip, I saw a passenger dragging their suitcase. So a suitcase, you can have the four wheels on a suitcase, but a lot of times you just have two wheels. So you have one side that has wheels and the other side that doesn't. And twice in one 3-day trip, I saw passengers dragging their suitcase on the side without the wheels. I don't know how you don't notice that it's heavy, or maybe they just don't travel enough that they think that's how their rollerboard suitcase works, is you just drag it. So I said to both, one time I was in my uniform, one time I was in regular clothes, I said, hey, it's easier if you use the wheel side of the suitcase. And both times I got a, huh? And I'm like pointing, I'm like, see, the one side has wheels and the other side doesn't, and you're dragging it. And both times I didn't get a thank you or great. I just got a, It's just humorous to me. So I was in London, and we stay at this hotel. It's a great location, but it's the teeniest, tiniest rooms you've ever seen. Sometimes you have to crawl over the bed, like roll over the bed to get to the coffee maker, because you can't walk around the bed. It's a challenge. But I've got it worked out. But it does, you know, you see those tiny house shows where you think, that looks nice. I have almost no overhead. I can travel more. But you stay anytime in this little teeny tiny hotel room and you think, no thank you, no tiny house for me. I don't want to have to be this creative. And, what if you have two people in there? That's crazy. So, okay, the size I'm now used to. But what I don't like, the bigger problem of some of these rooms, not all of them, maybe they used to be adjoining rooms and they took the door out. I don't know. But there's some rooms where you can hear every single thing. I mean, you can hear every word. You can hear everything in the room next to you. And so I'm sound asleep in my tiny room, and it's 2 a.m. and I had to get up at 5:30 a.m. and two people come in the next room. I didn't even know I had one of those rooms, because there, I guess, hadn't been anybody in it up until that point. But now it's 2 a.m. and these two women are whooping it up loud. They're partying at 2 a.m. and I had to get up at 5:30 a.m. And so I tried earplugs. I tried turning the TV on. I got an app on my iPad and was playing white noise. Nothing helped. Then, I'm sorry, I hope this isn't going to be offensive, but then I didn't realize they were lesbians. And how do I know they were lesbians? because they started having relations. And this session lasted forever. And I could hear everything. I actually clapped when they were finished. It's like, thank goodness. Can we all go to sleep now? Okay, so what happened?
So I asked the guy what he wanted to eat. And I told him the choices we had, and then we no longer had the choice that he wanted. And so he was upset about this. You know, when I tell them, they like, you don't have that anymore. And I said, no. And then, so he said, I don't want anything. And then I just gave him the cold tray. And so then there was only left the salad and the crackers and dessert. So then he proceeded to open the crackers and crumble them up on the floor.
Oh my gosh.
So I was like, okay, so one less thing for you to eat. So I said, that'll show me.
I like when they think it's going to hurt your feelings if you don't eat the airline food. Yes, that just, it hurts. It pains me.
Oh, yes. You'll show me. Thank you.
I'd like to thank any of you who were so kind and generous when you're going to buy something on Amazon. You took a few seconds to go to my website, bettyinthesky.com. It doesn't cost you any more. It supports the show. You can even bookmark it, so it's even faster. And I like to see what people buy. This past month, somebody bought a Zanzibar travel guide right up my alley. Someone else bought the World Atlas of Coffee. Interesting. And a book called Relax. It's only a ghost. So if you'd be so kind, think about going to my website, bettyinthesky.com. Click on any of the Amazon links, and it supports the show. And I thank you so very much. So a lot of times, especially when you start, you don't know the names of things, or you haven't heard it.
You're right. They don't know how to pronounce them. Anyway, so I was in first class, and we were boarding, and, you know, I was going through offering. And I don't know why I was offering that, but anyway, that's what I had. So I went up to the man and asked him, would you like some petite fours? And he said, go away.
This came from listener Martin. Thanks, Martin. Before COVID, I flew a lot for work. Literally, Siberia for a meeting, home to Switzerland, repack the suitcase with warm weather clothes, and back in the air for Mali. You've seen a lot of unremarkable road warriors like me, tapping away on our laptops until the meal service, then taking a snooze until it's time to land. We don't bother the flight crew, though I've been known to help translate on Africa routes that the European carrier hasn't staffed with a Swahili speaker, or deflect a passenger hitting on a flight attendant as she prepares a snack service in the galley. Usually, my job is to get somewhere, and your job is to get me there safely, with our interactions are limited to polite smiles, and yes, I ordered the Asian vegetarian meal, and yes, I'd love a glass of white wine, thank you. One flight was very different. My then-wife, a physicist, had a conference in Hawaii. Since she was still nursing our 22-month-old baby, I had to come along for the ride. The whole two-week trip involved 48 hours in the air with an infant. Let me tell you, we spent a month prepping our daughter for the trip. I bought her two picture books about airports and airplanes that we read every night. She knew that the seat in front of her belonged to somebody else and could never be kicked. She knew that the other people on the airplane would be trying to sleep so she couldn't cry or yell. This is so smart. I don't think most parents, or hardly any parents, would think to do this, because this way the child is familiar with what's going to happen. It's really smart. When we got to security checkpoint for our first flight in Geneva, she was giddy and pointed at, "Security! Security!" So cute. Our second flight was going to be the real killer. 11 hours nonstop from Baltimore to Honolulu. This is one of the longest domestic routes in the U.S. Blessedly, we had a friend who lived in Connecticut, worked in Dallas, and he had way too many air miles from making the commute every week. He gifted us for an upgrade for one domestic segment. And here was the mother of all domestic segments. Business class, here we come with our lap baby. When we boarded the plane through the front door, it's about the only time in thousands of flights that I've ever got to turn left instead of right to find my seat. Row A and B. Big, fat window and aisle seats. We start to arrange ourselves when we hear 5B say to her partner, "Are they allowed to have babies in first class?" Her partner mumbled something back, and she said even more loudly, "Are babies allowed in first class?" I glance back. She's mid-30-ish, blonde-ish, and definitely a devout reader of Elle and Cosmo. As my wife, my baby, and I position coloring books and other activities for the flight, 5B actually flagged down the flight attendant and was demanding to know how we could possibly be allowed to be in the first-class cabin. "Ma'am," the flight attendant explained, "they bought their tickets with the same terms and conditions as everyone else. We'll do everything we can to make sure the baby is comfortable and she'll probably sleep most of the way." Having failed to get us evicted to cattle class, 5B started a loud diatribe to her partner about the injustice of a baby flying in first class, and then continued on and off for hours. Meanwhile, our little girl colored and played quiet games and listened to me read stories to her. She didn't cry or yell or throw things, and the seat in front of her was way too far away to even think about kicking. After 5 hours of whining from behind from 5B, I saw 5B finally go to sleep. Not long after, I reclined my enormous seat further than I ever experienced on an airplane. My baby snuggled into my chest, and we had one of the most delightful naps of my life or hers. When we awoke about 3 hours later, 5B was watching a movie. We didn't hear any more complaining for the next few hours. Then, as we were starting our descent into Hawaii, the flight attendant passed by row 3, row 4, got to row 5, planted her feet next to 5B, pivoted, waved to catch my attention, and then said, "Sir," inches away from 5B and loud enough to make sure that my wife and 4A could also hear at the window, "Your daughter was perfect. She was very well behaved. Very, very well behaved." 5B said nothing. As we got our bags from the overhead bin after we landed, she would not even look at us. She kept her eyes fixed to the floor as she scurried to the door to get into the terminal. And when we walked out next, with my baby girl in my arms, the flight attendant met my eyes with a conspiratorial wink and one of the biggest smiles that ever welcomed a jaded traveler to their destination.
Years ago, I grew up in Austin in the 70s.
It's okay.
And my parents were, you know, I don't know, they weren't wild, but they had parties and stuff all the time. So they had these friends of theirs playing a band at their Christmas party, and they said, "How much would it be?" And they go, "Well, can we use your house for our Christmas party?"
Oh.
They were like some 20-something-year-olds. They called the Longhorn Band, but it wasn't the marching band. It was like, you know.
So it was like
anyway,
a trade.
So we went to spend the night out. We come back, and I have two sisters, and so all of us shared a bathroom. So I go in the bathroom. We can't find our dog. We have an Afghan hound. And they wanted us to leave the Afghan hound there. They're like, "Sabrina will be the head of the party." So I walk in the bathroom, and there is this hippie passed out with hair like down to here and the Afghan hound's blonde hair all laying out in the bathtub. And I'm like,
there's a man.
So this guy flight attendant was saying, I think we were talking about people poking us. We don't like to be poked. And he goes, "Oh my gosh, I had this older woman. She was from somewhere exotic. She had on like an ethnic outfit. And she was poking him in his private area, in his junk. She was poking him." And he just turned and went, first he was going to say, like, "What the F are you doing?" But he said, "What do you want?" Because he's thinking it must be something important if she's poking him in his private area. And she goes, "Watha, watha." He's like, "I'll get you some water." He was going to say something. He just didn't think there was any point in scolding her because she obviously had different boundaries than he does. And she's poking him in his junk going, "Watha, watha." Why did you become a flight attendant?
I became a flight attendant. It was my father's idea. My father was a career Army man. He thought a lot of the military, and it was the most, probably other than meeting my mom in Germany, was the best thing that ever happened to him. And he said, you know, the last three years, my father, so he could avoid another move and we could stay where we were living in San Francisco, right there on the Presidio Army Base, right by the Golden Gate Bridge. He did what was called escort duty, and he escorted bodies back from Vietnam. And he flew a lot during that time. He usually did two funerals a week. And they treated me so well when I had to go down, you know, then they had to go down the side steps and make sure the body was boarded. And they always treated me with such respect, and the body as well. So he said, I would like to see you fly. So it was because my dad happened to see in the Dallas-Fort Worth airport that they were hiring flight attendants. And it was because of my dad's wonderful experience flying through the South.
That's sweet. What, yeah. And you did it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all because of that experience he had.
That you're here.
Yeah, that's right.
So I don't really ever talk that much about the flight attendants who aren't so great. Luckily, I don't run into that many of them, which is good. And I don't like the podcast to be negative. But if you guys fly, you've run into some that aren't so great. You know, they're lazy or they're not so nice. So I had two odd ones in the last month. And the first one is a guy, and he was just complained all the time. He was lazy. Let's just say he wasn't my favorite. So then at the end of the trip, he's like, oh, so nice flying with you. And I'm not very good at lying. So he's like, oh, so nice flying with you. And I'm like, yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, uh-huh. Anyway, this one was odd. We're in briefing. That's when we first meet and tell everybody our names and everything. And this junior flight attendant comes in and says it's going to be her birthday and that we have to do something fun. And then I didn't really talk to her on the flight except for the one time when she says, yeah, it's my birthday. So I'm hoping that somebody on the crew writes a check out, a blank check. They don't write the amount, and I can write whatever amount I want in there, and I'm going to write in $20,000. And I'm like, what? What was that? Hello? Who do you think's on the beverage cart with you? Oprah and Bill Gates? We serve Coke and chicken for a living. Nobody's writing a blank check to someone they just met. None of us have ever seen her before. And I don't write a blank check out to anyone. It's like, yeah, so it's Bezos and Gates and Zuckerberg and Oprah. That's who's on your crew with you. Uh-huh. We were in the galley talking. I know for some reason we were talking about names, and I said, I like the name Fufula. And they all looked at me like, what? What did you say? I said Fufula. They're like, that's not a name. I'm like, well, there's a fox on Instagram at the Save a Fox Rescue, and the fox name is Fufula. And then we start laughing, and I kept saying, well, you know, it's just really fun to say Fufula. And then I was like, Anne, you could possibly use that word for other words. And anytime you use it, you're going to get a strange look from people, like, a what? So we were talking about, we were on this plane that has a pilot crew rest that has two bunks and a door that locks. And I was saying, well, you know, that bunk is like prime for Fufula. Because we have bunks, beds with a curtain. You would think there'd be some fooling around going in there, but there's always other people in there. You know, there's always like five people, four people, six people. So, you know, it's not prime for Fufula because there's other people and you'd get caught. But this pilot crew rest, just say if there were two people into each other and it's just the two people and the door locks, it's prime for Fufula. We were also saying you could say, like, say you didn't want to say the F word. You can instead say, what the Fufula? This next story I recorded in an SUV in Churchill, Canada, when we were looking for polar bears. I haven't aired it, even though I was there in November, because the audio is a little wonky in that when you're in an SUV with six people, and actually, no, eight people, including the guide. And so you have the vehicle noise, and then the people in the front row, the people in the second row, the people in the third row, their audio is all different. So I had to like tweak everybody's audio, but I think you can hear it. And it also shows that you meet very interesting people when you're traveling.
Yeah, yeah. So I met 105 or 106-year-old
man. Yeah.
In Okinawa,
right? I think at the time they told us that the oldest living was 114. I don't know if that's correct. Yeah. It was, and supposedly this person, this gentleman, I think it was, it could have been a woman, I don't even remember, just said 114-year-old. Basically, the key that they felt was not just the diet, but it was the volcanic soil was incredible. And then the fact that they, because of the good diet and their longevity, they're always active. So outside, this particular, you know, elderly person always was still farming somewhat, her own garden. Yeah.
Yeah. They move like all the time.
Yes.
But there's this other thing that Ayumi was saying, like,
oh, look at the snowpack.
Stuff like that. She said, you know, the thing that especially, so the Japanese word for grandma is obachan.
Obachan, okay.
And so we always say, like, the Okinawan obachan, they drink alcohol every day. Instead of getting drunk.
Like what kind? Like sake?
No, sake is Japan. In Okinawa, they have a different drink, which is called awamori.
Okay, it's not a rice base?
Rice is Italian Thai
rice. Ooh, but, like a Thai rice. Yeah, that's so much better. I'm sorry, but if I'm going to have one.
I guess I'm getting older. You know, we're all getting older, and we're flying with a young girl. It's funny. One time we were flying with a young girl, and this other funny flight attendant goes, we should have a sign, baby on board, baby on board, like they have on your car. Anyway, we had this young girl, and we were late, and so she had missed, she's a commuter also, so she had missed her flight, and that was going to be ours till her next flight, and we're getting off the plane, and she said, I think I'm going to change, and I'm going to go have a drink at one of the bars at the airport, and, you know, maybe have some stranger danger. And I was thinking, stranger danger? I never think of that. Maybe I'm not, you know, maybe I've really changed, because for me, it's like, no stranger danger, please. No stranger danger.
We were all standing around talking in the galley, and I have this beautiful young black lady, flight attendant, French speaker, very elegant, very poised, you know. And all of a sudden, she starts kind of saying cuss words under her breath. And so we're like, what's the matter? She goes, oh. You know, I can't speak French. Oh, it's just awful. I was standing up there. I was doing my, you know, life vest imitation. I was looking, I was just looking fly that day. You know, I was just very French. And anyway, and she goes, I went to pull that off. Off goes my wig. And there I am in my stocking cap in front of everyone.
That's really cute.
This next story, some people like a warning. So here's your warning. There's one swear word in this next story, but it really kind of needs it. I have a story about one of the things. I've been flying for a long time, and the only thing that's consistent about the airline industry is inconsistency and change. That's the only thing you can count on, is that everything's going to change. And so it's funny, when you fly with flight attendants who've been flying as long as you have or longer, they'll bring up things and you go, oh, I forgot all about that. I forgot all about that. So somebody said, do you remember, I think it was a 727, the front row of coach didn't have a tray table. And so back then they hadn't figured out that they could put it. Now they put it in the armrest and you put it up. But at the time, and I was like, oh my gosh, I haven't thought about those stupid tray tables in so long. It was a tray table that we had to keep in the closet. We'd have to go get it from the closet, straddle the person in the front row to put this metal tray table, and then there were holes in their seat, and we'd have to put it in. And so Oh, and by the way, I'm going to do a whole bunch of these type of stories in the next episode. So this flight attendant was telling me that Cher was sitting in the front row of coach on that airplane. And this male straight flight attendant went and got the big, weird metal tray table, has it in his hands, straddles Cher, and she goes, "What the fuck are you doing?" You have to watch what you assume. And I'm going to have to backtrack just a little bit on this story, just in case there's, I think most of you listen a lot, but it's in case you haven't heard the story, none of this is going to make any sense to you. And I'm going to recap quickly that I had been laughing about this crazy passenger who had a real life turtle with suction cups on its hands and feet stuck to the window. And then I had told the story a bunch of times, and the other nice flight attendant made me a little plastic, the turtle's name was Herman, made me a little plastic Herman with suction cups on his hands and feet, and I would stick it to the window everywhere where, and I was traveling and take pictures of it, and it was fun. And then poor Herman became, I called him handicapped, because two of his suction cups fell off because probably I used them too much and his little hands and feet weren't made to hold suction cups. Okay, that's the backstory. Now I'm working first class with a flight attendant that I fly with all the time. And I guess I assumed I had told her about Herman, but I guess I didn't. And then I'm flying with another flight attendant, and she mentions that she was on the flight when we first heard about Herman, the suction cup turtle. And so then I assumed that I had told her that that other flight attendant had made me a little plastic suction cup Herman turtle. It all sounds silly. Anyway, so now the three of us are in first class, and the flight attendant who was on the flight when we first talked about Herman said, "Oh, that was so funny about Herman." And I said, "Oh, yeah. Oh, I got to back up one more little time there." The purser, who I've flown with a lot, very nice, funny, and that flight, that day, we had a gentleman who was in a wheelchair who didn't have use of his legs. He was basically, I don't know if it was a birth defect or whatever, but he basically didn't have legs. So, I seemed very capable, you know. Anyway, he had been on that flight. So, now we're in the first class cabin, and the flight attendant who was on my flight when we first talked about Herman said something about, "Oh, that's so funny about Herman." And I said, "Oh, you know what? Herman is now handicapped." And she's like, "What?" I'm like, "Well, two of his suction cups have fallen off." And she goes, "How do you know?" And I'm like, "Well, they fell off." And the purser thinks we're talking. She, of course, when I said handicapped, she heard handicapped, because who's handicapped? Nobody's handicapped. People are handicapped. So she thinks we're talking about the man who came on in the wheelchair. And she said, "He has suction cups?" I'm like, "Yeah." And she said, "Well, where are his suction cups?" I'm like, "They're on his hands and his feet." And she goes, "Well, what does he use them for?" And I said, "To stick to the window." Like, hello? She's picturing the man with suction cups sticking to the window. And she's looking at me like I'm crazy. And then the other flight attendant's looking at me like I'm crazy. And she's like, "How do you know that Herman lost his suction cups? Did you see that lady again?" And I'm like, "No. I have a little plastic Herman suction cup turtle." And then the purser goes, "What the?" And she used a other word, but F. "What the F are you talking about? That man has suction cups and he sticks to the window?" And I'm like, at this point, I was just like bent over laughing, because we had like a three-way miscommunication, a three-way thruple, kerfuffle, a thruple kerfuffle. So she's picturing the man in the wheelchair with suction cups, and she's saying, "What does he use them for?" The other flight attendant didn't know about my little plastic Herman with the suction cups, and she only knows about the crazy lady who had the real Herman, and she's wondering how I know that the real turtle's suction cups have fallen off. So I had to tell the whole story to both of them, and it ended up being very funny. Well, that's about it for this episode of Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. I hope you'll join me again next time so we can travel around the Fufula world together. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, kids, when you fly together, she'll tell you where she's been and tell you where she's going. You'll have some fun, so why not come along? Seat belts are fastened for takeoff and the signal is strong. Heard her yet? She loves traveling, there's no doubt. Betty and the Jets. Oh, she's weird and wonderful. Oh, Betty, she's a podcast queen. She's wearing high heel shoes, got her wings on too. You know, I've never seen her better stew. Oh, Betty and the Jets.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.